Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
And welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. Producer Ben may be sleeping in the other room. He missed the music. All right. We got ourselves a story I found online. And this is just sad. It's sad that we've gotten to the point where technology has progressed itself, where these sort of things are presenting itself. It's a situation where a woman was sitting next to her dying grandfather in a hospital. This is in California, Fremont, California. Kaiser Permanente Medical Center. And the 79-year-old man was losing his battle. His lungs were failing. And she's told the doctor's going to come in and the doctor's going to give an update on the status of her grandfather. This is what happens next. And this is KTVU reporting this.
When Ernest Quintana went into Kaiser Medical Center's emergency department in Fremont Sunday, his wife of 58 years, his son, his daughter Catherine, and granddaughter Annalicia all worried about the 79-year-old man. He was in the ICU with Annalicia by his side when she said the nurse came in.
The nurse came around and said a doctor was going to make rounds. And I thought, okay, no big deal, I'm here.
Mm-hmm. But shortly after, a robot arrived in the room. Ooh. With a doctor who appeared on a video screen.
Oh, man. Have you seen these robots that have been going around schnooks? You know, I don't know if they're what they're looking for or whatever. I knew at one time, I just don't remember what it is. But these robots, this is what the robot looked like at this hospital. It looked like a motorized base that would, you know, move this thing around. And it was just kind of like a tall kind of poles. And at the very top, it looked like a vertical iPad, just a tall screen. And on the other end of that screen was a man sitting behind a desk. There's a little speaker on the thing, and it would try to talk to the patients that way. I don't know about you. Being in radio, my hearing is not as great as it used to be and probably will never get any better. You know, I wear headphones every day. I'm listening to loud noises in these headphones as I monitor myself and in the audio clips we play and the callers and things like that. When you have speakers that close to your ears every day, a lot of people in radio have hearing issues at the end of their career. I know I will have hearing issues. That's why you hear a lot of radio personalities talk about audiologists and things, because it's just a perfect fit for people in our profession. And if you work around loud noises, you know too that it's not always easy to understand what other people are saying. And it's good to get your hearing checked out. If you are 79 years old and you're in a hospital bed and there's beeps and there's echoes and there's nurses running around and there's other noises and there's other distractions, if you're trying to put an iPad, you know, 10 feet away from your face and you have a hard time hearing to begin with, you don't know anything that robot is saying to you, let alone trying to understand, why is a robot coming in and trying to give me a diagnosis? You're telling me I'm paying you and the insurance company's paying you tons of money and you send in a robot with a video screen? Are you kidding me? So listen to what happens next.
Annalicia took this cell phone video so she could show her mother and grandmother the test results.
When I started the video, I didn't realize that all of this was going to unfold.
Over the robot's video screen, she says she and her grandfather learned that Mr. Quintana's lungs were failing and he did not have long to live.
Wow. You know, I don't know if he's going to get home.
Annalicia says that heartbreaking news hurt even more, delivered through a machine.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't think he's going to make it home. No compassion, no humanity. Shame on any hospital that would do something like this. You're telling me you can send a robot in to do this? You're telling me you don't see that as inappropriate? You don't see that as disgraceful? You don't see that as inhumane? Are you kidding me? You got the family sitting there worried about their loved one, and you send a robot in? I don't think your grandpa's going home. Real, real classy, huh?
Devastated. I was going to lose my grandfather. We knew that it was coming and that he was very sick. But I don't think somebody should get that news delivered that way. Mm-mm. It should have been a human being come in.
She is absolutely right. Absolutely right. What a sad sign of the time, isn't it?
Her mother, Catherine, says the family is also upset because Ernest Quintana had trouble hearing the doctor through the robot speaker.
Of course.
Forcing Ann Alicia to relay the terrible news.
Yeah, I have an iPad at the house. We have one and we'll FaceTime my parents who live in Michigan. This thing could be 3 feet from my face and I still have a hard time hearing it sometimes. I can't imagine. The way that this robot was away from this guy, I mean, it's probably about 10 feet away because, you know, you have a big hospital bed and this thing could only get so close to it. So think about the head of the bed down to the foot of the bed and then even backed off even further. So you're probably about 6 feet, seven, maybe 8 feet away from the guy's head just based on not being able to maneuver this little robot any closer. That's just shameful. It really is.
He already has a problem hearing. So with that and everything, he couldn't hear. She had to repeat everything that doctor was saying.
No.
Kaiser Permanente Senior Vice President Michelle Gaskell Hames gave us a written statement that says in part.
Yeah, I'll play that in a second. But imagine you're the grandkid and you say, Grandpa, I'm going to have to be the one to break the news that you're dying and you probably won't live much longer. You have to relay the news from this robot doctor. You tell me a nurse wouldn't even be suitable to do something like this? Just such, so shameful, so shameful.
We offer our sincere condolences. We use video technology as an appropriate enhancement to the care team and a way to bring additional consultative expertise to the bedside.
How in the world is that appropriate? How would they see that as an appropriate use of the technology?
Catherine Quintana said she and her mother asked hospital staff about how the robot was used. They say the answer,
that's policy. That's what we do now. That's what we were told.
The Kaiser statement said, this is a highly unusual circumstance. We regret falling short in meeting the patients' and families' expectations in this situation, and we will use this as an opportunity to review our practices and standards with the care team.
No, use this as an opportunity to get that garbage out of the hospitals, period. You have no room for these doctors to come in and this is their job, to zoom around on their little robot wheels and, oh, that's going to be the end of that. Sorry, your grandpa's dying. Probably ain't going to make it home. See you later. Bye.
I don't want this to happen to anyone else. It just shouldn't happen.
Today, Kaiser said that they are reaching out to the family, and the Quintanas told me that they really hope with this new technology that this hospital and others that use robots will really re-examine their policies and think about the patients and how these robots are used.
Yeah, it's just sad. It's sad all the way around. It really is. You hear these stories, and you think, oh, man, that's going to be the saddest story I hear all day. Well, good news for you. I have another very terribly sad story for you coming up next. Why is it that it's so easy to find the sad ones, you know? So easy. There's one that's right here in Missouri, not too far here from St. Louis in St. Francis County. We're going to get to a story about a 35-year-old and a 39-year-old parents who, well, did something pretty terrible to their kids. So we're going to get to that next in Overnight America, KMOX. America, we are together for another about 40 minutes or so until the first day of the week is gone. It feels later because of the time change we had over the weekend. I couldn't believe how many people online were happy for the time change. Oh, this will be wonderful. Oh, everything's all hunky-dory. Hey, look at the bright side. At least you get to drink coffee earlier than you normally used to drinking coffee. No, no. No bright side. Enough of this. I just feel like it's dragging now. But our American stories come up at 2 o'clock. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. If you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast at KMOX.com/overnight, or you can get it wherever you download your podcast. Just search for Overnight America. KMOV did a story, and it's going to be hard to top the one from California where a doctor on a video screen wheeled in by a robot tells a 79-year-old man, oh, you're probably going to die, which he did a couple of days later. And this robot is so, I guess, underwhelming that he can't hear anything. The audio quality and the volume on this thing is so low that the grandkid in the room had to relay the information. Grandpa, I hate to be the one to tell you this, but you're going to die here. You know? Isn't that the job of the doctor? I don't know why you would pay that hospital. What kind of doctor fees are you paying? You know, they're probably charging you full price as if the doctor was there. This medical system, everything's so screwed up anymore. Is there anything that's not messed up? Well, let me go to a story, and KMOV did this one in Leadwood, Missouri. So KMOV did a story, and it's going to be hard to top the robot doctor, but how about we give it a try, huh?
Seven kids ages 5 months to 10 years old lived in this house, this yellow house, and what conditions are called as inhumane.
All right. Let me try to give you an idea, and I'm just going to eyeball the outside of this house. I'm going to guess it's probably a 900-square-foot house, and they had seven children and two adults in there. So nine people live in it, and I'm just going to guess about a 900-square-foot house. Nothing fancy about this house. Looks pretty run down because they got, like, couches on the outside and baby pools and a bunch. It doesn't look well maintained. We'll put it that way.
Neighbors didn't know that many kids lived here or the nightmare they were going through till the 5-year-old and the 7-year-old got out without their parents knowing it one day in November.
Absolutely no idea.
Pat Abney didn't know seven children lived in the yellow house across the street because they never came out.
Wouldn't you be shocked that you live next to someone on your block across the street? And you have no idea what's going on inside that home. This is another reason why you have to be in contact with your neighbors. You have to know your neighbors. You have to be friendly with your neighbors. You have to keep an eye on your neighbors. And if you see something funny, hey, don't just say, well, it's someone else's problem. Let them deal with it. Not to your neighbors, you don't. Pay attention. You know what's funny? Where I grew up, my parents' house, my dad always, you know, kept the blinds closed. Very rarely did he have the front window open. So the neighbors across the street, they thought, oh, I don't think I've ever seen anyone inside that home. You know, they saw people coming in and out of the home. They saw us playing in the front yard or whatever it was. But they said, I don't think I've ever seen a light come on in that house. My dad kept that thing locked down like Fort Knox. So I kind of understand that part of it. But at least we were always friendly, knew all of our neighbors and knew their names. But I just can't imagine. I can't imagine finding out that one of the neighbors across the street, like I'm just thinking to myself, finding out there was seven kids inside a home in terrible conditions, and the parents were doing some, you know, they were keeping them in those conditions.
Then one day, he saw two of them wandering in cold weather.
Two kids crossing the street with no shoes and coats and nothing on. And they come over trying to get in houses and cars and stuff.
The kids were across the street and two doors down, but said they were lost and didn't know what house they lived in, apparently because they'd never seen it from the outside.
Can you believe that? How terribly sad is it that you're 5 and 7 years old? Who knows if you've ever left the house? Maybe they just kept them in there. You're stuck in this house, and wait till you hear what they found when they got inside. But you've never been outside to see what the outside of the house looks like? Oh, my. Then the neighbor catches him in the cold, not wearing winter clothing, without shoes.
Abney looked down and saw their bare feet were dirty.
I thought it was mud, and it wasn't mud. It was human feces.
Police were called, and after going inside, they called DFS workers. The toilet was broken and overflowing. Police say feces was everywhere, even caked on the children's feet.
They say it was bad. All over the beds, floors, everywhere.
Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine that? You can't pay those people enough money. I don't know how much they get paid, but if they have to go in and deal with scenarios where there's seven children living in a house with no working toilet, and there's just feces everywhere, caked onto their feet and their beds into the floor, and they're walking around this stuff. you walk into that nightmare scenario, what happens? I mean, you instantly, you're not prepared for that. You're not, unless you keep a hazmat suit in your car, you're burning your shoes and you're burning everything. Like, you take your clothes off and you're like, I'm sorry, it's going in the incinerator. And I got to go take a 40-minute shower. I'll probably go through an entire bar of soap trying to wipe that off of me. And man, you can't imagine some of the scenes that these workers unexpectedly walk into without knowing what they're about to see. And they probably have seen some pretty bad things. I'm going to guess they haven't seen something like this.
It was nasty.
39-year-old Robert Hillhouse and 35-year-old Christina Hillhouse were arrested and charged with 7 counts of endangering the welfare of a child. Mm.
Absolute disgust. Like, how can somebody live like that?
She stayed in-house all the time, too. He went to the stores, and he got groceries, and then the kids helped pack it in and pack it out.
Police took all 7 children to the hospital to be checked out. They didn't appear to have been physically abused, but had been living in awful conditions for years.
I mean, just throw this question out there. Parents, let's say they go to jail or whatever. Any chance that those parents should be allowed to get their kids back? Let's say one of them doesn't go to jail. I don't know. Let's say one takes responsibility and the other one doesn't, or whatever it is. Any chance that you would want to reunite those children with those parents? Or is it pretty much at this point you're trying to find a family that's willing to take on 7 kids because you don't want to split the kids up? What do you do? I don't know how you could ever give those kids back to those parents. I don't know how you can ever trust them with children. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. And I'm looking at their mugshots. Christina Hillhouse is 35. She looks like she's about 55. Robert Hillhouse is 39. He looks like he's about 55. They do not look 35 and 39. I'm 35. I don't look anywhere near as bad as she does. I know I could probably surprise you. If you've never seen what I look like, you can go see it right now if you go to KMOX.com/overnight. But man, I don't look that beat up for my age compared to what these mugshots look like. How could you as an adult live in that too? I've seen an episode of Hoarders, and I try not to watch the show too much. But if you need some motivation to throw away every possession you have inside the home, watch a couple episodes of Hoarders in a row. And there was one, and these are like psychologically deep problems that some people hold, where the toilet wasn't working. So they kept stacking the human waste past the toilet seat up, and it was just a giant pile of it. And you get these organizers and these clinical psychologists in them. They walk in and they try to change the mindset of these people that won't throw anything away. They won't do anything aside. You know, they look in, they say, oh man, I got about 8 of these old plastic tubs I got when I bought lunch meat at the grocery store. Man, I can't throw one of them away. What if I need one of these tubs sometime in the future? Oh, look at this old cereal box. You know, I guess I could use this for arts and crafts sometime. I'll never throw away this cereal box. Oh, you got these old shoes that are worn down. There's holes in the sole. No, you know, you never know. I might be able to donate those. Someone could use those. Maybe I can sell those. You know, in their mind, it's just, they need a change. And I don't know what was going through these two's heads, but they were living in it too. I guess if you want to look at the bright side of a story like this, at least the kids weren't abused physically. I mean, they were abused by the conditions they were put in, but at least they weren't getting beaten or anything. Hopefully there's family members. Hopefully there's someone, but if you're a family, there can't be family. I mean, if there's family, have you just not seen them? If there's 7 kids, so even if they were putting out a child a year, are you saying that you haven't seen the kids in 7 years, or you'd be able to ignore the smell of caked on feces in their feet? You can't overlook that. Are you saying no one's been to your house since then? No one's ever looked in? There hasn't been any inspections? There hasn't been nothing? No one? There's no smell from not one of the neighbors next to him said, man, it smells like raw sewage coming out of that house. Nothing? Man, it's just crazy. That was on KMOV if you want to see that story and check it out for yourself. It's just terribly sad. Police are requesting a bond of $150,000. Luckily, the children's still in care. Looks like Christina pled guilty to 2 charges of endangering the welfare of a child. They're going to be sentenced to 2 years unsupervised probation. That's it. No jail time for them. 2 years of unsupervised probation. Wow. Well, they didn't say what they have, what's happening to the kids. I want to know what's happening to the kids. Are the kids going back to the parents? Man, I hope not. They got to find a better situation. That house has got to be condemned. How do you even clean a house like that? Ugh. All right. Pray for those kids. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Joining us now is Lillian Salerno. She is the former deputy under Secretary for Rural Development in the Department of Agriculture, also podcast host for Pod Bless Texas. Thank you for joining us here on KMOX.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
There's a lot of farmers that are still trying to figure out what's going to happen between the United States and China when it comes to these tariffs. There has been some movements, but there hasn't been. It's also hurt farmers who have loans that are due, and they're trying to figure out, is this going to be long-term? Is this going to be short-term? We see it a lot here, even in the state of Missouri. We talk to people and how it's hurting local farmers here. And this is something you follow. With the tariffs that the United States are currently imposing, I think the long-term gain is to try to help some of these trade imbalances. But in the short term, you're telling me there's a lot of farmers that are getting hurt.
Yeah, sort of a tornado of issues that makes it so farmers are very insecure about what's going on. First, they have, you know, historically low prices anyway, mm-hmm. and then they've got this trade agreement not being worked out, which we thought it would be worked out by now. And then we have that the government shut down for a month, and so we just now are finding out that our farm service loans are as delinquent as they are. This time last year, they were somewhere around 16.5% delinquency, and now we're already up to 20%. And so it just making people really nervous about, you know, where we're headed on this, and we don't really have any answers. And I think the president's trying to get answers, but what he's stated, I guess, when he was speaking to the National Farm Union, it's just, you know, be patient. This is all going to be good. It's just a lot of farmers are going to go belly up while we're working it out.
You know,
which is really unfortunate.
I know that farmers, they have insurance. So if there's some sort of, you know, disaster or something, none of this is covered under insurance?
Not this part.
Yeah.
For weather. And then you also have the climate piece. There is, you know, there's not, no matter how you feel about climate change, for a farmer, it's undeniable what kind of, huge, swaying back and forth of weather patterns. And so farmers are having, you know, for years now have been affected by that. And so they're just feeling a lot of pain with all these issues. I think people like the National Farmers Union are, you know, urging Secretary Perdue to try to put some more policies in place that will give farmers some additional kinds of safety nets.
You know, which type of farmers are getting hurt the most right now? I mean, are there some that are doing okay and some that, you know, particular crops that are doing very poorly when it comes to selling?
Yeah, well, the commodity crops, which is where a lot of our exports go into China, like soybeans, those are really getting tumbled because I think maybe 70% of soybeans grown in this country go to China. So mm-hmm. when all of a sudden there's no buyer, that makes it very, very challenging.
Yeah.
So it's the commodity crops. I mean, the folks that are shipping, you know, anything that's domestic shipped is not being hurt. So it's mostly things you can ship in big containers and mostly to China. So that's who's hurting, which is the Midwest.
Yeah. Joining us now, Lillian Salerno. And who are the big buyers? Have there been any other countries that have stepped up in between this spat between the United States and China?
I think they've been trying to push them to other countries, Asia and in Europe. But there's only, you know, people are used to supply lines always going this direction for the commodity crops towards China. So it's not a natural quick turn that the U.S. Farmers can do. So, you know, you have that, you know, this is a big farmer issue. I mean, there's small farmers that are going to be affected because they fell into the sort of the conglomerates in agriculture, but it's the big agricultural commodity dealers that are, you know, really pushing the president and the U.S. Congress to do something. The president and the Congress had issued some, I think they called a market stabilization, had given money last year, I think somewhere $5 billion originally, and then another maybe four, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of, I think there's a bunch of hearings that were last week, and then some more that are coming up to address the situation.
You know, with the negotiations with Canada, when that was going on, when they were talking about NAFTA and between Mexico, United States, and Canada, they talked about how some of these tariffs between the United States and Canada were just outrageous in some certain different industries. Has that helped at all with our relations with Canada after they renegotiated that?
There hasn't really been enough time for people to assess it, but I think there was a lot of, you know, people thinking that it would help out, but I don't know if we have enough evidence to know that it has. That's what's so hard when you make these big shifts in policy. You know, it takes a little bit to know what worked and what didn't, and I think some farmers and some people on Capitol Hill are just worried that we're changing so many things. I don't know if I agree with this.
Mm-hmm.
Just what you hear is that, you know, we're changing too many things too quickly, and therefore we don't know which part of it's working. But
yeah.
Because I worked for the Department of Agriculture and was, oversaw a big loan portfolio, the government really doesn't like it when they, you know, have huge delinquency. We don't do well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, one of the big issues, and I worked at a station that covered a lot of farming issues, and I always talked to the farm director about how China manipulated soy prices, and he would always try to explain to me how they would just, basically, they would put in a big buy, they would see if the market would change, if the price lowered, they would cancel the buy and buy it at a lower price, and they were always manipulating these little tiny ways. Do you see any negotiations with China trying to help in the way of their manipulation of the pricing?
Well, I'm the president. I mean, I work for the other administration, but I think what the president, I think the intention is in line with what the U.S., you know, what we're wanting to do is to make sure we have more trade, you know, within our hemisphere. But I think what we've found out is, you know, China has had the imbalance is so great that we are really not a great position to negotiate.
Yeah.
But I think the intention is to correct just exactly what you were describing.
Oh, interesting. You know, I always wonder, too, when you hear, and this may be a weird thing, but when you hear negotiations with North Korea and trying to figure out what's going on there, there's a lot of people there. And I think about how President Trump touts this as you can have just amazing economic stability there, and just think about how many different things you can do to try to grow this country. You're in a great position in the world. I mean, does that factor into farmers if you think about, hey, maybe if we open up business to a North Korea, let's say there is a deal that's met there, would that be something that farmers could, you know, they would be able to start supplying to a whole new base of people they weren't allowed to supply to?
Well, I mean, we have a huge, we're great farmers in this country, and we have, and, you know, more than half of our U.S. embassies around the world have an agricultural diplomat in those countries because it's important for the U.S. to be able to have markets. So, yeah, it's what we do, and it's one of the ways we, you know, have, I guess, what we call business diplomacy. So I think that is some of the intentions. Certainly, we've had that with, all of our Latin American partners and then places like Vietnam where we've had stable relationships, and a lot of that comes from doing business. And so, yeah, I'm certainly that's part of the diplomatic, one of the tools we use in our diplomacy. So we just don't know. I don't know enough about what exactly we'd be selling to North Korea, but I think there's huge markets for sure.
Yeah, there's some potential. Joining us is Lillian Salerno. And one other question for you is basically how much is left in the tank when it comes to farmers. How much can we anticipate farmers can continue going the way things are before we hit a tipping point with just, you know, they're missing out, they're having a hard time, crop prices are low, and they're always watching to see if there's going to be some deal with these tariffs. I mean, how much longer can farmers go before we hit a point where we're in real big trouble?
Well, I mean, many people think we're getting there quicker than we would like to. And when you look at it and some of the problems we have, because farmers are in rural communities, and you look at some of the challenges we have in rural America, like suicide and opioid deaths and, you know, poverty, you know, that's where a lot of our farmers are. And so, and we have this other issue that, you know, all of us are concerned about, is just the age of the average farmer is, you know, in their, I think, late 50s. And so we need this new generation of farmers. That doesn't mean that every, your kids and my kids are going to go out there and take a small plot and farm it. But we do need a lot more people in agriculture. We have a lot of, you know, it's a different kind of agriculture, but we need people interested in it. And thank God for our, you know, land grant universities around the country that do a great job educating, you know, this next generation. But we need lots more people interested in being part of the rural fabric of this country so that we can maintain some of our history of being, you know, world known for agriculture. We just don't have enough people going into it.
Yeah, I grew up in Michigan, so Michigan State, very well known for their programs in agriculture. So very familiar with that. They always would talk about that. And yes, you need interest. You probably need good interest. I look at the Ocasio-Cortezes of the world that'll go out and say things, you know, like cows are ruining, so we need to stop. Farming when it comes to livestock because it's hurting our environment. You need good interests. You need people that are well educated in how to tend to their land and such without the people there trying to discourage it, because I don't think they know what they're talking about.
Yeah, well, there's many probably in Missouri and Michigan and Texas a lot like it. There's not so much difference between Republicans and Democrats. There's a lot of difference and a lot of polarization, but there's a lot of more difference, and I believe for a place like Texas that I know, between rural and urban.
Yeah.
And that's what you see people, you know, rural people not understanding what the problems are in urban America, and urban people not knowing what the problems are in rural America.
Yeah.
So I think all of us need to have an interest in both camps.
Absolutely.
to get it working.
If people want to check out the things you're doing, like your podcast, for example, or any other of the issues that you covered here today, where can they go?
Yeah, that'd be great. We launched a podcast called Pod West Texas, and I did it with another person, that's Kendall Scudder, who is also from rural America, rural Texas, and we talk about things going on in Texas, and we have a big love for rural Texas, so we talk about that. And then they can follow me on Pod West Texas or on Lillian_Salerno, and I talk about ag, but I'm not in the administration anymore. I do some consulting on ag, but there's just a lot going on, and I just am so hoping that we can get some resolution for our beloved farmers in this country.
Let's hope so. I think we all want to see this between the United States and China end. We don't want to see this long term. I think both countries can come out ahead, but really, the United States, it would be great to see them come up with something that would work for everyone, and I think the farmers are in a big position to win. Let's hope for the best. Lillian Salerno, podcast is Pod Bless Texas. Had a great conversation with you today. Thank you so much for joining us here on KMOX.
Thank you.
She joins us on the GL International Realty guest line. Not bad. Interesting look. I always enjoy hearing some of the farming issues that are out there. One more segment before we say good night together here on KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. I wonder if anyone listening had the time this weekend to check out Captain Marvel's opening day. So Captain Marvel apparently did pretty well. $153 million the launch weekend, not bad. Just another one of the superhero movies to throw onto the pile of super movies. Superman, Superwoman, super whatever. Superhero movies are a dime a dozen anymore, but they're so well done for the most part, and they're enjoyable, and they go on an adventure, and they shouldn't be all controversial or anything. Anyone see it? I'm curious. You can call or text at 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. A little controversy over the weekend when it came to this Captain Marvel movie. The controversy is, within hours of Captain Marvel hitting theaters, roughly 58,000 audience reviews had flooded the Rotten Tomatoes website, plummeting the audience score down to just 33%. You know, I don't know. Some people liked it. Some people didn't. Some people thought it was way overrated. you know, I'm probably not going to see it. Eventually, it's going to show up at the library. And my wife's going to rent it from the library in, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months from now. And it might be on in the background. And I'll probably have interest in it for 10 minutes. And then I'll look at my phone. And then I'll leave because I won't care. I mean, I'm just going to guess that's what's going to happen. So why in the world was the audience score down at 33%? Well, this was the controversy. Captain Marvel's audience score apparently was hit with almost like a phishing attack or something like that. So the number, apparently, they say, were from people submitting it before the actual movie was out, or there's no human possible way that they could have seen the movie before the review went in there. So it's a lot of fraudulent reviews, and a lot of people were spamming the site in order to just give it a low rating. So the Rotten Tomatoes website is pretty popular. You can go online and you could review a movie if you want to, but then they also have critics' reviews, so they balance the two out. They look at, here's what the audience said, here's what the critics said. So sometimes the audience scores will be really low and the critic scores will be high, and sometimes the audience score will be high and the critic scores will be low. Some people will use that as a way to gauge if it's a movie they like or not. Some people, not everyone, but some people. So Rotten Tomatoes, the website that does this scoring, had to put out a statement. It says, we launched some changes to the movie pre-release functionality last week, which included not allowing users to leave comments or review prior to the movie's release in theaters. However, we still invite users to vote if they want to see a movie prior to the release, and the vote total is displayed on the site. So they're throwing it under the bus, their algorithms or whatever they use. $155 million. Or no, $153 million. Pretty good. So it took in $302 million internationally, giving it a global estimate opening weekend of $455 million, the sixth highest global debut of all time. So I think it's the top movie of the year by far in 2019. It'll wind up the 18th biggest domestic opening weekend of all time. Some of the other movies that were out, let's see. How to Train Your Dragon came in second with $14 million, so pretty big difference between the two. Tyler Perry's A Medea Family Funeral had $12 million. Lego Movie 2 was still up there. The second part was up there, too. So, I mean, there's some other movies out there, but by far just completely dwarfed by Captain Marvel. You know what? Excuse me. You know it's March. Everyone's going to start doing brackets soon. You know who did a great thing about brackets? How about this? Kevin Killeen. Gotta love a whole nother story.
Definitely within the last 5 to 10 years it's changed.
What happened?
The popularity of it.
Kathy Edelman is a member of the St. Louis area human resources community, and she tells us that she and her fellow HR professionals have noticed that more people are taking off work during March Madness.
There's a commonality that we've kind of identified that many of our male employees are suddenly going out on short-term disability or short leave, sick leave for elective surgeries.
And this lines up with March Madness?
Absolutely. Runs exactly parallel with March Madness.
Could it be a coincidence?
Well, I'm thinking not.
So I've heard anecdotally hernias, vasectomies, things where they can sit around and watch TV.
Absolutely correct.
How frustrating is this for the HR community? Every March this comes around.
Well, you know, we kind of just chuckle amongst ourselves in the HR community, and, you know, it's understood they want to have the procedure, and timing is everything.
But this is cutting into productivity. They should be at their desk.
Well, correct. However, they also need to take care of themselves medically after having such a procedure.
But couldn't they have that done on some weekend when they're not at work?
True, they could. But, you know, we're not ones to tell people when they have to have their surgeries done.
Have you noticed, short of surgeries, any other absenteeism or excuses that pop up among employees during March Madness?
I'd say that absenteeism is on a rise during that time, yes.
Are we getting to a point where the HR community is going to say this far and no further, March Madness has got to stop?
No. No. I don't believe so. Not at this point.
That's HR professional Kathy Edelman. And with a whole other story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
Great music in Kevin Killeen's Whole Nother Story for tonight. Oh, boy, that's a good one. One quick thing before we say goodnight, and we'll be back again tomorrow. And don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter, at Ryan Recker. Or if you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast at KMOX.com/overnight. Or just download it on your favorite podcast app. Someone by the name of Jim on Facebook posted this. I'm going to read this to you because I felt so smart answering him. Said, back in 1982, my family was driving in the middle of the night in Ohio on vacation. We had an AM car radio. For some reason, we were listening to a program of some guy giving weather reports throughout the U.S. That's all it was. Any idea what show or what station this could be? And I'm reading some of these responses, and I know I can't wait to respond because I'm like, I think I can throw in some insight into this one. So some people were saying, you know, Ohio, they thought it was, you know, WLW, or some people thought they might have been getting stuff from WWL and New Orleans or whatever it is. And I responded, I said, probably the great man that walks and talks at night, John McCormick from KMOX. The guy looked it up online and said, yes, that was it. Solved a mystery from 1982. Isn't that what social media is all about? Oh, wait, it's not. All right, we'll see you soon.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.